Well, yesterday I talked to Mark Thomas, who is a professor of evolutionary genetics research at the Department of Genetics, Evolution and Environment at University College London. That is a
well,
mouthful.
Well, don't forget through that.
Is all I'm saying. And as I said, I was talking to him yesterday about a paper he co-authored, wait for this, called AIP Mutation in Pituitary Adenomas in the 18th Century and Today.
What?
Yeah. So shockingly, I did start off by asking him what the hell that was, fairly obviously.
Pituitary adenomas are tumours that cause the pituitary to grow. And this is a small organ inside the brain. And these tumours tend to overproduce growth hormone. And depending on when they grow, they can have various effects on the individual, including causing the individual to grow abnormally. And we usually refer to those as giants. Or for certain parts of their body to grow, like their hands and certain facial features, which is referred to as acromegaly.
Mark, how does this have anything to do with Ireland?
So we've looked at this gene that causes this this pituitary growth and this so giganticism in a number of Irish families, and also in an individual from the 18th century who was a very famous giant from Ireland. And they all have the same mutation. And we were able to use some genetic methods to work out or to estimate how old that mutation was. And it's quite old. I mean, it's about 1,500 years old. So given that it's been around for around 1,500 years and it causes, in many cases, giganticism, then yes, we can say that there would have been these giants from this same cause, same genetic cause, in Ireland over the last, 1,500 years.
Now, you're talking about a guy called Charles Byrne, thought of as a freak when he was in London in the 18th century. Right. He died at the tender age of 22, but he was from Northern Ireland. Now, would this giganticism be confined to a locality?
That's a good question. So, if you have a particular rare genetic mutation, then often they are confined to just narrow localities, yeah. That doesn't mean to say that it's just found there. People do travel, and over the last few hundred years, people have traveled more than they probably ever have at any point in the past. So you will find that version of the gene in other places. For example, individuals in Britain have been found with it. So yes, it does travel, but it does seem to be particularly concentrated in this region of Northern Ireland.
The story regarding Charles Byrne, because it is through his two teeth that you trace this DNA?
That's right, yeah.
The story is particularly gruesome. I believe that he was taken by a surgeon who was quite obsessed with him, John Hunter, and essentially his body was robbed because he wanted to be buried at sea and not become a skeleton in some case. His body was boiled, I believe it was, by the surgeon, John Hunter.
Right, yeah, that's all correct. I mean, it's a tragic story because he had TB and suffered from alcoholism, and he died very young, which is partly due to his TB and his alcoholism, and partly due to his condition being a giant. At the time, these surgeons were they were considered vultures, and perhaps they were vultures at the time, and so many people were afraid. People who would work in the as we say rather unpleasantly now, freaks, they would be chased, to their death by these surgeons as curiosities. And Charles Byrne was very aware of this and wanted to avoid it. He didn't manage to avoid it. He was chased down by this surgeon and ended up being boiled. I mean, boiling to get the bones was just the standard practice at the time.
I know it was back in the 18th century. It does sound gruesome. Considering that his body was boiled, did this add an extra challenge in extracting DNA?
Yes, it does. One thing, I mean, the problem with getting DNA out of old material is that DNA breaks down. Actually, DNA is a really quite tough old molecule. I mean, if you get pure DNA and dry it out, it's a little bit like cotton wool, but it's a bit stronger. And, you would expect it to be strong because, you're writing the secrets of your, future generations in it. So it's got to be a fairly tough molecule. But over time, it does break down. And one of the things that really does damage to DNA is heat. So given that, it's quite impressive that the DNA did survive. But then again, it's only a few hundred years old. We've got DNA from human remains that have been boiled in acid and things like that. So it's harder, but it's still possible.
God, it's quite the gruesome job you have sometimes, is it? Just, you know, boiled in acid, an average day at work for you, Mark.
Well, yeah.
Let's talk about the ramifications of this now, because as you said, this gene could be traced back 66 generations, I believe it's something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
What ramifications does it have today?
Well, if you have a genetic variant and you can estimate how old it is, then that's also going to tell you something about how common it is. And so using that approach, we were able to estimate that, you know, there's likely to be a good few hundred people today that are carrying this genetic variant, many of whom wouldn't know, but then might occasionally have a giant in the family. Now, gigantism is actually, I mean, it's relatively easy to romanticize it, but it does have, you know, some health implications, and it can be avoided if people are caught early. So now having this gene is a very good, is a predictor, one predicting factor for whether somebody is going to develop gigantism or acromegaly. So now we can identify whether people have got this genetic variant and then treat them accordingly. So it's, you know, tracing the history of this genetic variant has helped to identify potential patients today.
Because obviously one of the implications would be that you are very tall. We know that this Charles Byrne was 7'7", I believe
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. But claimed to be taller in the 18th century, but you know how people exaggerate.
An Irishman lying? Never. That would never.
I don't think it was him, actually. I think it was probably the people who were making money off of him that were exaggerating.
Yeah, because he would have been one of these freaks to look at. I know it's a desperate term, but those shows from the 18th century, really.
Right. I mean, he would have been exploited. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and it does sound like an incredibly sad story. But for, we'll say, people around now who have this gene, what are the health implications bar being very tall? You know, is it uncomfortable to live with this?
Yeah, I mean, it can cause various things from, you know, bad head. I mean, I must make these things clear. My involvement in the study was as a geneticist. I'm not a medic. The person who led the study is the best person to ask about the medical implications. So I can really give you a slightly informed but not completely informed knowledge on this subject.
You know more about it than we do, Mark. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm not sure, but I hope so. I mean, it can cause headaches, problems with joints, problems with bones and so on, and usually does lead to early death as well.
So it is an important discovery.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I think that one of the really nice things about the study, though, is it's such a compact story that brings in history, you know, genetics, evolution, medicine, but also it's the history part of it is not without its own controversies. You know, I mean, this man, he didn't want to end up in a museum. He wanted to be buried at sea. So obviously there are, you know, we had to think about the ethical issues of studying him at all, given, you know, what he wanted. I mean, I think that can be justified. What we've done can be justified because, you know, it has, in the end, helped to treat people. And perhaps more importantly for him, helped to treat people who are his relatives.
Yeah, but in regard to that, talking about moral implications about this, he didn't want to be viewed in a case. Are his skeletal remains still on display?
They are.
Is there any talks of perhaps releasing his skeleton and complying with his last wishes to be buried at sea?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't know, and it's really not my area, but I certainly know that it's controversial. You could argue, of course, that now we've shown that rather than just being a thing of interest in a medical museum, that now his remains have been directly useful to medical science.
Yeah.
But what that says about whether the remains should stay on display or not, I don't really know.
Well, from your point of view, you will be helping not just his relatives, but other people who do have this gene, which is very unusual. And for that, is that something nice to get from your work?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I'm not a medic. I'm a geneticist. So it's nice to be involved in these. Usually, we study things that may be very interesting, but we're not going to save anybody's life.
No direct application for you to get a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, it is nice to be involved in something that's actually going to help people's lives.
Because I did see that there was a guy from Northern Ireland who was very excited about this discovery because he has this gene himself. But Mark, it must have been very interesting work for you.
Oh yes, it was really interesting. It was a really interesting study. It was a nice study because there were also some nice and interesting mathematical genetic challenges to it, which we think we solved. So, I mean, these are things that are interesting to me, perhaps not interesting to medics or anybody else. But.
How I feel about the Sunday Times crossword is how you feel about that. I'll get it done in the end.
Yeah.
Mark Thomas from University College London, thanks so much for talking to me.
It's a pleasure.